is the number one producer of Lobush blueberries in the world. And 60,000 acres throughout the state are designated to grow Lobush blueberries. Maine produces 25% of all blueberries in North America, and this is a wild crop that occurs naturally in the understory of forests. Throughout organic Lobush blueberry fields, you'll find the distinct mounds of Formica exsectoides, the Allegheny mound ant, which is native throughout the eastern half of North America, where it forms thatched bare mounds. Workers are voracious predators, feeding on both live and dead arthropods, dead vertebrates, and seeds that they encounter. In the early 1990s, Nancy Campbell conducted work on the species in the Jack Pine stands and observed it preying on various stages of the red-headed pine sawfly, jack pine budworm, gypsy moth, and white pine weevil. This is a fairly common and abundant natural enemy throughout Lobush blueberry, yet no one has looked at its foraging capabilities. I am particularly interested in its role as a predator in the system, as well as its potential use as a biological control agent. So the objectives of this talk are to evaluate the foraging patterns and prey preferences of Formica exsectoides in field and laboratory studies. So the first question we asked, does Formica exsectoides exhibit a prey preference? So experiments were conducted in the summer of 2006 in four organic Lobush blueberry sites. We selected two mounds per site and monitored each mound one day per week for four 30-minute periods. Monitoring consisted of sitting next to a mound and picking up all foragers that were entering the mound at a specific point. So we would pick the foragers up with soft forceps, inspect the mandibles with a hand lens, and determine if there were any prey present. If prey were present, we removed the prey, placed it in 75% ethanol, and took it back to the lab where we identified it to order. In addition, we collected sweet nut samples during each sampling period so that we could compare the taxa that were present within the field to those that workers were bringing back to the nest. Data analysis consisted of calculating the Euclidean distance to look at the difference between the taxa in the field versus those that the ants were bringing back. And we conducted a nested ANOVA on these distance matrices. So here you see the results. This is the percent on the left. The table shows the number of each order that were brought back to the mound by foraging workers, and this is all data combined. As you can see, Hymenoptera and Lepidoptera were brought back in the greatest numbers. Hemiptera and Diptera in smaller amounts, and then beetles, crickets, grasshoppers, spiders, and Collembolans brought back to the mound, but in very small amounts. So then, the graph on the right is the relative abundance of taxa in both ant and sweep net samples, with ants in blue and sweep net samples in orange. So what I want you to notice here is that for the Hemipteran, Hymenopteran, and Lepidopteran data, you sort of get the idea that perhaps ants are showing a preference for these prey. Whereas with the spider, beetle, and Dipteran data, it looks almost like ants are foraging for what is most abundant throughout the fields. So after looking at this data, we came up with two different hypotheses. One was the total abundance hypothesis, and this suggests that perhaps foragers are simply feeding on what is most abundant within the field. And the second hypothesis was the prey preference hypothesis, which states that foragers are preferentially selecting prey. So here you have two examples of these hypotheses. On the left, this graph represents the total abundance hypothesis. And if this is in fact occurring, you'll see that the relative abundance of taxa would be basically equal between the ant and the sweep net samples. Then on the right, this demonstrates the prey preference hypothesis. And here you can see that the relative abundance of taxa would vary between the ant and the sweep net samples. In addition, we developed an index using the Euclidean distance. If in fact we are seeing the total abundance hypothesis, the Euclidean distance would approach zero, and the distance for this data is 0.16. If we are seeing the prey preference hypothesis, the Euclidean distance would approach 2, and the distance for this data is 1.66. So here's the actual data, and you can see that the overall mean Euclidean distance for this data is 1.3. which is somewhere in the middle of our index, suggesting that we're seeing both a prey preference as well as foragers simply feeding on what is most abundant throughout the fields. The nested ANOVA indicated that 32% of the variance between the samples was a result of the week that they were collected. So we graphed the mean Euclidean distance for each week, and you can see there is a decreasing slope, suggesting that foragers are showing a preference earlier in the season. So we wanted to tease apart what we were seeing in the field, so we decided to take a closer look at prey preference by conducting laboratory studies. And these studies were conducted in the summer of 2007, and we designed a two-chamber microcosm, which you can see in the picture here. There was one chamber that was the nest chamber, and this was connected to a feeding chamber by plastic tubing. Within the nest chamber, we placed 200 workers and 50 larvae, and ants were starved for 24 hours. We then introduced prey into the microcosms, and this was a no-choice test. So we were introducing the same species. Prey were introduced at 5 densities, and we had 4 replications for each prey density. And the prey included 2 species of blueberry pests, as well as species that were pests in other cropping systems. So the blueberry pests were blueberry flea beetle larvae and pupa, and blueberry leaf beetle. And the other pests included lily leaf beetle, cucumber beetle adults, and Mexican bean beetle larvae. So we observed the foraging for the first 8 hours, and then we recorded the number of prey removed each day for 7 days. We then used a linear regression to look at the functional response of the foragers. So here you see the percent consumed of available prey, and this is at a single density, the greatest density that prey were offered. And as you can see, there is a preference for prey, and this seems to be independent of prey biomass, with crickets being much larger than blueberry flea beetle larvae. Also, blueberry flea beetle larvae and pupa are about the same size, yet you can see that there is a difference in the percent consumed. I also want to point out it's the same species. So here we have 2 different life stages. One is much more preferred than the other. And I do want to note that I am assuming preference from a no-choice test. So that's being assumed. Also, another interesting point is due to prey availability, all prey except for the cricket, which was our control, were coleopterans, and there is quite a bit of difference in preference amongst those species. So here we have the functional response, which indicates the prey consumption rate. And as you can see, there is variation in the consumption rate, with crickets being consumed at about a 2.5 times greater rate than the Mexican bean beetle larva. And finally, this graph shows the average percent of prey consumed throughout the days that we observed these microcosms. And we see here 3 patterns of feeding. The first is a larger prey that seems to be preferred, and we see satiation. And this is the cricket adults, which is the red line on the graph. Crickets were consumed for the first 48 hours. Then it appears that colonies were satiated. They stopped foraging. And then on day 6, they began foraging again. The second pattern we see is a smaller prey which requires more handling time, and this is the blueberry flea beetle larva and the Mexican bean beetle larva. You can see that these prey are consumed consistently throughout the time that colonies were observed. And finally, the third pattern is prey that is probably non-palatable or toxic to the ants, and this is the cucumber beetle adults, and that's the green line on the graph. And you can see that this prey species was not even touched within the first 48 hours. It was then consumed, and then no more were consumed throughout the remainder of the experiment. And again, this is the result of a single choice or a no choice test. So we need to look more closely at multiple choice tests to sort of look more closely at preference. So in conclusion, in the field we observed that foragers are both selectively choosing prey as well as feeding on what is abundant in the fields, while in the lab it appears that they are showing a preference for specific prey species. And this has several implications for biological control. If in fact foragers are simply selecting prey that are abundant in fields, it suggests that when you have an increase in a pest population, the foragers will consume those numbers of pests. However, if they're preferring certain prey species, it suggests that certain pests will not be consumed at all. So I'd like to thank these individuals and my funding agencies, and I'll take any questions. Yes?
Did you have any concerns about whether the functional response you saw would actually be regulating for herbivore populations?
No, I didn't look at regulation. That's actually something that I want to look at in the field, looking at what density these ants need to be in or what density we need colonies in order to control certain populations. So, no, I couldn't tell that from the lab studies, but that is something that I want to look at. Yes?
So, what was the reason why you didn't have a multiple choice test?
I just wanted to first look at these specific individuals. That's something that I am planning on doing this summer, but I wanted to first look at specific species and how the functional responses would be for those species.
So you assume that when you do the multiple choice test, it will be like a replica of field?
I don't know. I mean, ideally, yes, but I think that it needs to be, you also need to do the lab studies in conjunction with the field studies to sort of see if that's true.
Short question. Short answer.
Is it possible that the aggregated distribution of some prey species make them appear to be preferred when perhaps they're not? That's just what you think?
That is possible. I mean, if they are encountering specific prey species immediately, it does make sense that, it would make them look more preferred.